Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Dr. Squatch. When your personal care routine needs a refresh, Dr. Squatch is here to help. They have high-performing natural products with no harmful ingredients that'll have you looking and smelling your best. Like the Bay Rum Soap and Deodorant. It smells delightfully spicy. And right now, they have an amazing offer for new customers. Get 20% off your first purchase of any amount or a subscription order by going to drsquatch.com/Spotify or use the code Spotify at checkout.
Nintendo!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of August 4th, 2016. I'm your host, Jose Otero, and this is IGN's Nintendo Show. I'm joined once again by Per Schneider. Brian Altano is not with us this week, but filling in for him, Jared Petty.
Happy to be here.
So, it is another week, and there's sort of things to talk about, and sort of things not to talk about. Well, you're back. Welcome back.
Thanks. I listened to your show last week.
Wow. Was it weird?
No, it was great.
Were you disagreeing in the car the whole time?
No, Jeff Gerstmann is a much better Jeff Gerstmann than I am a Jeff Gerstmann. No, he did. He was awesome. It was great to hear his opinion, and loved the kind of list start that you... kicked off there. That was really cool.
Oh, Fist Nest Classic. Yeah, and we're going to get into that. So just a reminder for folks, we have a YouTube channel, and we're working on some cool content for that. But you head on over to youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. You can also leave us feedback, just like, and this was on iTunes, but still it counts, it's feedback. A review from Strummer8907, who gave us a great rating and called us absolutely amazing. I could listen to these guys for hours. No, you don't want to do that. We will put you to bed. But I love the insights and opinions they share. This is truly one of the best resources for anything Nintendo, and they do such a spectacular job. So thank you for
Thank you so much.
So we're going to kick things off with some NX Das Hype. Like, maybe? I don't know if this is hype or not. It's passive hype? I don't know.
Hype?
The hype is that... Outlet MCV ran a story that says Mario, Zelda, and Pokemon will headline Nintendo's NX lineup within the first year. So I'm just going to break this down before we start, and then we're going to unpack this. But and we're going to get to my favorite quote of this whole thing. But all three products are scheduled to appear within the first 6 months of the machine's life. So now keep in mind, that's March 2017, according to Nintendo right now. So the firm, apparently Nintendo's been securing third-party support in Sega, Square Enix, Ubisoft, Activision, and Warner Brothers already being on board. This is not official, by the way. This is sources told them.
Yeah.
Sources close to them have also said that this is Nintendo's move to make sure that the NX does not suffer from the same slow start as Wii U or 3DS, which historically is true. And these same sources confirmed Eurogamer's NX report as 100% accurate. We brought up on the show as well, we heard about detachable controllers as well. We did hear that bit, which was driving us crazy. And then lastly, just that once again, hearing game graphics will fall somewhere between PS3 and PS4, or PS3 and Xbox One. This story said PS4. With Nintendo targeting an audience that sits between smartphone and hardcore gamers on PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah, interesting, super generic rumor. Like, with the leaked information about the NX, this is the kind of stuff that we heard from developers, weren't able to get a source to go on the record or let us run the story, and so we feel really confident that the information about the handheld fusion device is real, right?
Like,
we speculated about it, like, years ago, and it's awesome, it's coming true.
Apparently.
This I don't know how to approach because it's such a generic statement without knowing a little bit more about the source. It's like, this could mean so many things, first of all. Like, Pokemon to appear could be in a freaking minigame, right? Like, or it could be, well, you can download the GB versions and they play on the NX. It's like, it's too generic for me to even care.
Okay. No, there's no surprises here. I mean,
Zelda we know is...
Yeah, the studios have been working on something for a while. There's no Wii U software coming out. So obviously the teams are building things. And if you're going to build cornerstones for a huge launch, then you lean on your tentpole properties. I think it's kind of a no-brainer. No surprises. And they realized they fumbled that last launch. They had great launch software or near launch software.
Two launches.
Yeah.
In 3DS cases, there was a turnaround. In Wii U's case, there was not.
You are correct. I agree with you.
But that's where I feel like this rumor doesn't feel true to me. Because I know realistically how they space out their titles. And like within 6 months of the launch, okay, if it launches in March, that means by September they would have launched Mario. Sure, maybe there's a sunshiny summer launch, a Pokemon game for NX. Okay, then what's the big Christmas game, right? Like, it just doesn't sound right.
Well, so let's unpack this a little bit. Yeah. So I'm glad you already brought this up, but we did know about Zelda. Nintendo's been very open about that. They've just never specified if it launches with the system or where it falls. We speculate it's either a launch game or it's definitely a November game within NX's first year. No question.
If it gets delayed. Like, I don't think they're going to launch it on Wii U and then hold it on NX till Christmas. That would be crazy, right?
So number two.
Death by No Zelda.
That's a good one. Have you used that before?
No.
Okay. That sounds like a band name.
Yeah, I like it. That someone has done it. So number two, Miyamoto told us Nintendo hoped to show off a new type of Mario game by next E3, which would line up with, okay, if NX launches in March, at E3 Nintendo rolls out or unveils Mario for the first time, the excitement goes through the roof. If not first playable, whatever they end up being. Like, obviously, when they formally announce the system, they're going to show games and they're going to show prototypes or try and get hype generated. But regardless, we know there's another Mario game that isn't going to be at launch. So presumably that falls in there, but we'd heard that before.
So that would be revealed at E3 in June, which means they would have to get this out within the next 3 months following that show.
Mm-hmm. Which has been done before. I mean, 3D World was an example of that, right? Announced at E3. Okay, number three. What we know of third-party support so far...
No, Pokemon is the third game.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I'll bring that up.
They're launching a big Pokemon game in the fall for the 3DS.
The next generation of Pokemon, and
so
I don't think...
So you're telling me in less than a year we're getting another one?
What if we get Pokemon Sun Moon on the NX?
No. That's weird. Because weird. Why would you burn those 3DS customers by offering that same game? I feel like when we heard about ports for Smash Brothers or potential ports for Splatoon, some time has passed, and clearly Nintendo probably wants to just keep those communities active. We've talked about that. Yeah. But in the case of Pokemon, we're talking about the next gen that a lot of people are excited for.
I agree.
I don't think that it makes a ton of sense, but maybe it does.
And if that's really what the quote means, then the Wii U had a Metroid game within the first 2 years of its life, if you count NES Metroid, right? Like, it doesn't work that way.
You
have a rumor that says there are new installments in these franchises coming, and that's what that means, or it's both.
I think it's more of a no surprises situation. They're all hard at work on something, and coming out with just this screaming, blinding barrage of familiar properties makes sense for them after a couple of really clumsy missteps. I think all the way back to the Wii launch, and how many really neat, fascinating pieces of software there were in that first 6-9 month period. I mean, there was a lot to play on that thing, and they've lost that. So just play it safe and come out with things people can't resist. I think Sun and Moon as an original on there doesn't make a lot of sense either. But something that plays with Sun and Moon on the other hand,
and that's the question, right? Then it becomes: is this the Colosseum to Sun and Moon?
Yeah.
Is this some sort of a game that either ties in or is just a spinoff entirely? Which
that's plausible.
Pokemon's not afraid to try a spinoff. That's where things like Picross come from. That's where things like Pokken come from. There are plenty, or Pokken, however you call it.
Yeah.
I get the name wrong every once in a while. Pokken.
The idea that you're going to be able to dump your Pokemon from your 3DS game into this and do something with them, or vice versa, suddenly you've got it.
Yeah,
totally plausible.
I just don't think they want to burn those customers.
I agree.
But then the next one, third party support. So Sega, Square, Ubisoft, Activision, Warner Brothers. So we know Ubisoft's on record. We know Sega's on record.
Mm-hmm.
We know Square's probably there because Japanese companies and Nintendo are a little tighter in relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't know about this Activision and Warner Brothers thing, but we'll see, right? Like, again, they're just
No, well, Warner has Lego. They'll always be on a Nintendo platform.
That's a good point. Right? What does Activision have?
They'll be there. Activision has Skylanders. They'll always be on a Nintendo platform. Unless that franchise is going.
Yeah, so again, playing it safe. That's
and when we
point.
Had Square, there was that early stuff about Dragon Quest that were some of the earliest steps.
Yeah. And the next Dragon Quest is an NX game, and that is still Square Enix. That's right. Great point.
That wouldn't surprise me. Like, and by the way, having been here for so many Nintendo platform launches, that's actually what Nintendo says on the record before every launch. They're
but
like,
they did
it. And then never comes to fruition that same way, right? Mm-hmm. I think it being a different type of device bodes well for third-party relationships because it's no longer this, you know, create a special SKU for a home console that's slightly less than the other home consoles. It is actually now a handheld device you take with you, and that... That opens up, I think, different types
as long as third parties can bend whatever game they're putting on PS4 and Xbox One to whatever NX is, if it has the capability.
If development's cheaper, which is always appealing to a developer, not having to put as much into making your game or your spinoff, whatever you're doing with it, and if Nintendo can sell the narrative that they are creating a new marketplace, that's going to be a huge part.
And the third factor is if it sells. I mean, regardless of the first two, if this thing sells like hotcakes, those publishers will absolutely show up wanting to make games. That's what happened on Wii.
Which is another reason I believe that when you were talking about a Mario game and a Zelda, and why I believe this is going to be something like a Mario Galaxy 3 type situation and a real Zelda game and a real Pokemon game, because I think they're going to blast out that first year and try to walk out
of... You think in 6 months after launch they'll have one of each?
I think they'll have one of each. Yeah, I really do. Well, and I think they're going to do that. Like, and I think they're going to do that for just so they can walk out. And what do I know?
But we know that the NX Zelda is a thing. Like, there is no new Zelda game.
So now there's two more, right? Okay. So we have two more big games based on tentpole franchises before Christmas. You sell a bunch of these units over Christmas, and you look at your third parties and go, see, guys? And there we go. I mean, why not do it?
So Mario Team, specifically...
I think they should. I think they would want to. I just can't see that happening.
Oh, wait. So this is the realistic Nintendo schedule keeping doesn't always line up the way they want it to. And that's I think that's fair... You're both on fair sides of this argument, by the way, I just want to say. But I would put out there, in Jared's case, in support of Jared, that the Mario 3D World Team has been quietly busy since that game shipped. Yep. And that was 2013.
Too. That's true, too.
Yeah. So those guys have been quietly working on something. You can say probably they finished that game. That game came out in November.
I want to believe. I've got my Nintendo UFO poster on the wall. I want to believe. Give me those franchises in the first 6 months. I'll be happy. And then please just don't make any more games. Just make Metroid.
So last thing, talked about this plenty of times before, but when the announcement was made that NX was delayed, but not coming to E3, the Nikkei reminder asked President Tatsumi Kimishima why the company wasn't launching NX in time for this year's big holiday season. And he explained to them Nintendo wanted to make sure they had games to go along with it. So this does fit the narrative that Nintendo has publicly been saying, which we have been talking about.
And by the way, if the NX gets delayed to fall next year, they have even more time to ready those games. You know, we'll see.
If that happens,
again, I want to believe. I want to play an NX in March. And like you guys talked at length about the hardware rumor and what it is and the detachable controllers, like that all sounds really cool to me. And when you have a device the power of an Xbox One or even of a Wii U on a small handheld you can take with you, that's freaking cool. Mm-hmm. That's really, really cool. Yeah. Gotta make sure you make the right games for it, because with great power comes very little battery life.
Yes.
And when you see this with the Shield, with any of these portable devices that are powerful like laptop PCs, they're going to run out of battery way, way faster than their 3DS.
I just love the idea I'll be able to buy like a big mule type backpack and just like plug it in.
Oh,
and
man,
walk around.
Look like a Ghostbuster.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you kidding me?
Great.
All right, so my favorite bit of this story was this next part, which we haven't discussed. And this was an executive who, a supposed executive source who had hands-on experience with the machine, told MCV, it's a nice piece of kit, a bit of novelty, but a good one. It won't appeal to PS4 fans. Nintendo seems set to be trying to upgrade smartphone gamers, was this person's takeaway. That's going to be a big job for their marketing department.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea that between smartphone gamers and hardcore gamers, there's an audience that isn't getting served, what do we think of that?
Well, this plays into Nintendo's strategy with mobile games, though, right? They've always said, yes, we will now do mobile games, quiet down investors, we'll make a couple of bucks over there. But we also leverage this platform as a marketing platform for our console games.
There's no play like it. That's what the slogan is right now, right?
And so, you know, like if this... That makes sense as a strategy, but it's like the reason why a lot of gamers are into mobile games is the factor that you always have with
convenience,
you, right? And so there is there's definitely money in mobile gaming. There are people who play games for hours and hours every week. There are people who spend hundreds of dollars on mobile games every week, right? So there is a market there, but I feel like it's still a convenience market. It's still people who are playing games because they have the devices with them on the go.
Versus something you have to take with you.
Yeah. And so it's tough. Like I mean, this is obviously the source interpreting the story and the device, right? Rather than, hey, Nintendo told me they're going after smart games.
It's true.
I feel like I am their audience for this. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I play games on my mobile phone, but I tend to carry a portable around. I commute a lot. I'm a city dweller. They're largely Japan-centric. They're thinking about a country with a lot of people riding trains every day where mobile devices are common. So I think that does still definitely help them focus. You know, they're focused at home a lot of the time.
Yeah.
That said, are there enough of me to make that happen? People who don't want to play the games.
I think there are. Right. I think there's a decent bet that there is, and this has been Nintendo's strategy for a while now, much to the chagrin of some of Nintendo's fans, that it is about gaining a larger audience of people playing games and not just hardcore gamers.
Yeah.
Nintendo's games can scale to that audience, but not every game is going to be made for that audience.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's bad.
So, like, I don't think it is going to be a PS4 on the go, right?
No.
And I think the software selection will focus on something different. Like, I'm hoping Zelda is not an unusual game for that platform, that we'll see bigger adventure games like that. But I'm a little worried about that if the approach is converting mobile players. Now, the big thing, though, with mobile players is that you can play these games anywhere. And, like, when you have games where it's even asynchronous multiplayer, you are relying on your machine being connected.
Yeah.
And there is no way in hell the NX will be connected when you're on the go. Yes, there will be some amazing partnership with McDonald's where you can use their Wi-Fi spot.
Or maybe there's tethering this time around, you know, like tether to like your data plan.
It's just
maybe pie in the sky.
To me, that feels too fussy already.
It's not turnkey.
And so that means the NX then for mobile gamers is going to be the at-home device.
Yeah.
And then you got to ask, well, but what market are you serving then?
Well,
to back up a little bit, though, I don't think Zelda is meant for mobile converted players at all. Zelda is for us.
Yeah.
The people
at
this table who like absolutely adore and love that style of an adventure game, I don't think they make compromises to appeal to that audience because that game's clearly for some of that audience, but not for everyone in that audience. Mm-hmm. Jared,
I think Nintendo learned something in two generations ago when the Wii was going up against the 360 and the PS3. They learned that one of the reasons the Wii prospered was because development costs for software on that platform were so cheap. It was SD instead of HD. It was old, reliable hardware that they already knew what to do with. It was easy to work with. You could make games much more cheaply on the Wii than you could on the more powerful consoles.
For sure.
Fast forward now, and we're in an ecosystem where we've talked many times about how the middle's fallen out. Mm-hmm. We have these super powerful consoles and PCs where game development costs because of art assets in particular are higher than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And we have a mobile phone market where there's tremendous potential for spending a little bit of money on a game and making a huge return, except the market's so saturated that being the guy that actually gets that game that everybody buys is a 1 in 1,000 shot.
It's a lottery.
So maybe they're looking at this and saying, right here in the middle, we see an opportunity. Games that are cheap to develop, cheap enough to develop, compared to, I mean, yes, it may be the difference between a game costing $50 million and $150
million. Sure.
But that may be enough to make something profitable for people. What I'm wondering if they're going for.
Yeah, I mean, it's a maybe, but I do think that we just don't know how much Nintendo games cost to make. I mean, for example, Zelda is the exception because Zelda has probably been the most expensive game they have cooking in-house right now.
Yeah.
At least the most public expensive game that they have right now, meaning that people know it exists, versus maybe Mario would be something like second place if that's still something that everyone's tinkering on. But to me, I don't know if any of this paints the picture for it is cheaper to develop on a Nintendo platform, just because I think that they're in trying to at least somewhat keep up with this race, mm-hmm. they are chasing the same kind of high quality, high definition art assets.
Yeah, Tegra
costs a lot of money.
A Tegra, that's Tegra 2 chip's pretty powerful. I mean, like, the kind of visual fidelity you're getting out of your iPad now, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty impressive. I mean, there's some games when you see them running, even when you put them on a TV, they look pretty damn good. Mm. And it's a testimony to the ingenuity of a lot of indie devs and smaller development teams that they can reach that kind of visual fidelity, because they're not spending $100 million on these games, obviously.
Well, again, that's
and
what I'm wondering. Is, yeah.
I think that's what you may see. So you're not going to get The Witcher or Assassin's Creed at that level, unless it's a port of one of the other ones. But you're not going to get from the ground up develop one of those games, but you're going to get the Lego City to the Grand Theft Auto.
That's kind of what I meant. Yeah, I think maybe that's cheaper to make.
One part of the selling point could be part of the story with Wii was this is the accompanying console. This is another mm-hmm. console you can have at home, and it doesn't have to. It could be your second console. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. As odd as that sounds, as being happy to do that, I think that by being that device at that price, it helped them a lot because it didn't cost a lot to buy. The games were cheap, as you brought up. I think all of that played into that perfect storm. And the accessibility was there, which at the end of the day, the Wii Remote was the coolest thing for that reason. Your grandma could play it, your mom could play it, families at dinner, or you can really get into a hardcore game.
Yeah, it's going to be – look, I mean, this is such a weird, weird gamble, you know, to create this device. And, like, it is not the PS4 that's going to play Nintendo games. And, like, honestly, I mean, having played games like Mario Kart or Splatoon on the Wii U, I'm like, they look great. They're good-looking games. So it's not like everybody's going, like, I wish, you know, these games were running on a PS4. They're very beautiful games, and they're certainly not low-budget either when you see it what went into them. Mm. But it is a weird gamble because the Vita – in its early lives, had power franchises on it.
Yep.
You know, like, these are not small games. You know, we're talking about, like, Sony's, like, top-tier franchises, like Uncharted being on the platform.
Yep.
And so if even, like, the Uncharted's and Gran Turismo's of this world couldn't sell this platform, you know, what it will take for this one is some, like, ingenious little hook that gets people interested where they say, I already have an iPad, I already have an iPhone, I have an Android phone, I have a console at home, but I need this because. And, like, one hook, obviously, is Zelda, Mario, Pokemon, right? Like, the big franchise.
Especially Zelda, based on what we saw.
Well, and especially Pokemon right now, right? Yeah. Like, and so that could be a door opener, but I think it needs a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I
think that's all fair.
Yeah.
That went on a lot longer than I thought, but I'm happy we did it.
Because you have Jared and Pei. By the way, Jared's been very quiet.
Yeah. So totally.
I'm trying to be a good boy.
No, I do laugh at. I mean, I meant what I said. Like, das hype, maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure about this one. There's definitive das hypes, and then there's this.
So I buy, like, this definitely to me sounds like. Talking to a publisher, somebody who has knowledge of the platform, looks at it and says, oh, I get it. I understand what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, though.
Yep. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to turn things over to IGN's Pokemon Secret Base, which is a new show. So you're about to hear the voices of Callie Plaguey.
Hi, I'm Callie Plaguey.
Miranda Sanchez.
Hello, I'm Miranda Sanchez.
And Andrew Goldfarb.
Hi, I'm Andrew Goldfarb.
So we're going to turn it over to those guys. Take it away, Secret Base.
There's a lot of changes coming to Sun and Moon. So Sun and Moon are getting a lot of new features, new Pokemon, and kind of different forms and different things for existing Pokemon. So I'm really excited, especially for the Alola forms. And before this, Andrew and I were talking about how does that work with Pokemon Bank? And that's, like, the big question is, Alola forms are really cool. So for people who don't know, kind of old Pokemon, the only Pokemon we saw with Alola forms were first generation Pokemon. Mm-hmm. So Exeggutor gets really tall, which I think is weird. Clever because it's, like, regions, like, tropical, appropriate. It's appropriate for the region. So it makes a lot of sense, and I like that they're kind of doing that world building with it. Like, you know, this region has a different culture and a different set of
so the way this
climates.
Pokemon would grow is different.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense. And then, for some reason, Vulpix and Ninetales and Sandshrew and Sandslash are all ice because they, like, adapted to the islands or something?
That's the weirdest part of it, is that the types are changing. Like Exeggutor gets Dragon type, I think, and Sandslash is Steel. And then Ninetales is fairy. Like, that's really interesting. Yeah. And ice.
And ice, yeah.
But, yeah, it's interesting adding that kind of twist to what they were.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this because the one thing that we were talking about earlier that I mentioned is Pokemon Bank. Like, does it a low-level Vulpix stay a low-level Vulpix, or does the Vulpix you have, like, adapt? I feel like it'd be the former.
Or maybe like a stone. Like, because my thing is, like, if I do have a Vulpix or a Sandshrew, like, when I evolve, is there some way I can, like, give them something that will make them evolve into the new version of Ninetales? Or?
I don't think they would. I think it'd make more sense because this is, like, region-specific. Like, if you look at, like, this one has adapted to this climate.
It would have to have been living
change
there.
It wouldn't change all of a sudden just because you're in this region.
Fair point.
Which means, like, the first question I had when I saw these is this, how is this going to affect how that Pokemon battles? Because I don't know if stats are changing along with types. Like, if, you know, Vulpix and Ninetales are more special oriented than physical. I might have that backwards, but I don't remember. The, like, ice type moves, you have to pick the right ice type moves, and, like, how do you incorporate stats into that? And then also just how do you incorporate Pokemon Bank? So those are, like, two big questions, but I'm really, really excited for those changes. And that was, like, probably the biggest thing for me from the most recent Sun and Moon trailer, even though there was a lot of stuff, including PokeRide. It's Pokemon ride sharing.
I love that. It's, like, so cute, too. Like,
so it's the continuation of Soar Over Hoenn, the feature from Oris, where you can get on a Latios, Latias, and not have to use the HM Fly. And it actually takes longer, but you get to explore the sky. So PokeRide seems like maybe you'll be able to explore different areas that you might not be able to get to on foot or something. There's potential there, but also the potential to eliminate HMs, which is my secret goal, my Team Rocket goal. No more HMs.
That would be really nice to not have to take the inventory slot. Yeah, that's actually a really good
point. Yeah, I always have to see. It's like, okay, well, who's gonna fly? Yeah. Like, I don't really want this, but I need it.
Like,
so.
Okay, I'll catch a Furret and I'll, you know, teach it all these moves or whatever, a Linoon, and I'll teach it everything.
I mean, I like it. It's funny in the, because they showed, like, Charizard, I think they showed Tauros, if I remember right.
Yes.
And it's smart that they're, with that and with the new Alola types, they're leaning into the original 150 a little bit.
Yeah.
And given Red, Blue, and Yellow earlier this year and now Go, that feels really smart because, like, awareness feels so high right now on those.
Yeah.
And so, like, you would imagine that, like, if even a tiny percentage of Pokemon Go players who haven't played the RPG want to come over, like, that's a good way to get them.
Yeah, it's a lot more friendly to them, especially. Yeah. It's like, I talk with so many people who are just playing Pokemon Go and haven't played any other Pokemon property or game and or seen the shows or anything. And so, like, having that familiarity is probably a lot more welcoming.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said, it's a really clever way to build up the world of Pokemon, because Pokemon games, they have stories, but the stories are, like, I don't want to say weak, but they're just lacking in some, you know, development, especially in the lore area, and that's kind of been a more recent thing, especially with the add-on epilogue to Oris. They have that whole dragon people doing dragon stuff. I forget their names, but they're doing cool dragon things. But I think it's a really thoughtful idea to say, you know, Pokemon have jobs, and canonically Pokemon have jobs, and it's like a dog with a job. Like, it's just better. Like, giving a Charizard a job and saying, you know, this Charizard is not your Charizard, but you can partner up with
it. He'll help you out.
Yeah, he's going to be your friend. He's your buddy. And maybe he'll snub you a little bit like Ash's Charizard, but who knows?
Hopefully he's professionally trained to not do that. Like, he knows to treat his clients well.
I mean, this kind of ties into, if you remember in the, like, one of the first, I think the teaser trailer, you see there's trucks and there's a Blastoise doing like firefighter stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So it just makes a lot of sense that this would be Pokemon with jobs sort of things.
Because in society, like, if Pokemon are everywhere and if everyone has their own and if there's some that are stronger than others, like, it makes sense that they would have them in the same way that, like, humans had horses pulling carts or doing things like that, like, or sled dogs or
a dog getting your paper or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And like Machamp, I think, does moving. Either Machoke or Machamp moves boxes. That's like in Ruby and Sapphire.
Yeah.
So all of that. But moving on, because those are probably two of the big things from the most recent trailer. And then the third I want to highlight is the trials. Which is sort of this weird, like, I've never really seen this in a Pokemon or like a mainline Pokemon game, but it's these separate sort of quests, and there's something called Totem Pokemon that you kind of challenge as a mini boss. And it's just very unique. It's different from gyms. I don't know if it's replacing gyms.
It doesn't seem like that because it seems they said that you still have like the kahuna. So it's like you have these totems, and then once you beat them, you can challenge the kahuna. So it's, I guess, the gym leaders of the region for this challenge that they have.
Yeah. I don't know if it's in addition to or it supplants it in some way.
Yeah.
It's interesting because not all of them are in battle. You don't challenge all of them. Sometimes it's like finding items or doing other quests. And I just, this is, again, the three big things from this trailer are all building up the culture of Alola in a really unique way. And I'm so, so excited to see how that translates to the games because... If, you know, if this is this totally different cultural experience from the other regions, the Japan-based regions, and then Unova and France.
It's France,
It's just, it's France. I'll remember, like, in 10 minutes, and then I'll shout it out. it's been a long day. But those have, you know, very similar structures, and I like that they're deviating from it without totally replacing the idea of, like, challenging something and becoming better, maybe, but you're doing it in a different way. And then I just really quickly want to touch back on older announcements because I think a lot of us are really excited for some of these, one of them being the Pokemon QR scanner.
Like, yes.
Yeah, Miranda, you were the one who was excited for this.
I'm very excited for the potential of finding Pokemon and adding my Pokedex through just QR codes.
Yeah, so I had sort of forgotten about this because this was an afterthought sort of to another trailer, but you can scan QR codes and see where they live.
Right, so the weird thing, too, is that you can scan anything, I'm guessing, because on the little teaser art that they have, this kid is just, like, toppled over in his bedroom, and he's, like, scanning, I guess, like, a bottle and just, like, something online. And, it's just, like, so the potential is really cool. But
I want to scan, like, an old plastic bottle and know where, like, Garbodor lives. I think that'd be really funny.
Yeah, and even if they do, like, McDonald's toys again or something, like, you can very easily, like, tie it in promotionally.
So, one thing I'm worried or interested in is how people could abuse that system, too, because, like, there's so many ways just to generate QR codes. So, like, what... stops that or what makes them different. I know you can also generate your own QR codes to share Pokemon you've caught with your friends. It's like, hey, you can look at this if you haven't found it, and then they can kind of pinpoint where that habitat is for the Pokemon.
Yeah.
It's I'm excited all around how different this feels like it'll be, like, because that, like, does change the ecosystem a little bit, where it's not just, like, you get stuff in-game and then there's a GameStop event once a month. Like, there's actually going to be some interesting ways to get extra stuff. And then, like, with the gyms and the kahunas, it's like, there have always been, like, kind of each gym is a little themed differently, like, find the switch or, like, fight in this specific order or whatever it is. Expanding that to proper minigames is exciting in the same way that I think this is really cool, where, like, maybe it changes how you're getting Pokemon or how you're doing events and stuff like that.
I mean, it definitely facilitates finding and filling out your Pokedex, and I think that's, like, the big thing for it because it is...
There's a
very time-consuming to do that.
Yeah, in addition to Wonder Trading, I think it'll help a lot.
My first thought was trading card game, too. Like, it makes a lot of sense that, like, if you get a card in the trading card game, maybe not every one of them has a QR code, but the ones that do, you can have straight in the game or something like
that. Yeah, something to tie in other parts of the franchise would make a lot of sense. Yep. And then we talked about this on the previous episode, which you can find on IGN.com. But the other things I'm excited for are hyper training. Hyper training is just a really promising thing to me to be able to kind of tweak your Pokemon's IVs, especially for Pokemon that you are hard to breed or you can't breed, like legendaries. Which helps with battle, because I love competitive battle. And then Battle Royale, we didn't talk about too much, but I want to talk about that a little bit, because it's very interesting. It's like a free-for-all, four-player, and I feel like a lot of people in the IGN office, especially, would mess with each other and gang up on somebody.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, it's all play. But then we all have the secret plan and team up against one person or something.
It's Andrew. We're going to team up.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh. No, I'm going to conspire with you. But yeah, so I'm wondering, I'm just excited to see how that unfolds, because I feel like the rules are one way, and then people are just going to find different ways to play it and just make it crazy.
For sure.
So that's another thing. And then the Pokemon Global Link, they're updating it. We talked about this in the previous episode, but I think that's really cool, just being able to facilitate your own competitive games. And I really would want to do one in the office, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And probably one with the show.
Ooh.
Okay.
Good tease.
Promising.
Yes.
We're back. Jose Otero here with Jared Petty and Per Schneider.
Hello.
Sorry, I need to double check what time it is. It's 21:37. No, I'm just checking time on our podcast. Yeah, exactly. No, because then that would mean that it's 9:30. Like 9:30 at night. Better preamble. We just turned it over to, or better way to sum this up, sorry. We just turned it over to our Pokemon Secret Base, which is a new podcast here at IGN. It's a video show. It's an audio show. We're going to have links in the description where you can find it. You should absolutely check it out. It is a very cool show, entirely focused on the wonderful world of Pokemon.
Yeah, and if you, I mean, you obviously know IGN well enough to understand what we're doing, right? We like to once in a while take a franchise that's in the public eye, very popular, that lends itself to deeper coverage. We've done this in the past with mm-hmm. Destiny and Fallout and some of the other games out there. And when we see an audience gathering around that topic and sustaining a show like that, we keep doing it. Mm-hmm. So if you like Pokemon, if you like this show, please check it out, subscribe, follow, whatever you can do to support it. If there is a viable big audience, we're going to keep on doing it.
Yeah, if you keep rating on iTunes, if you keep watching, if you keep writing in, that's how these shows keep happening. These are probably my favorite thing we do here, are these focused discussion shows. I really enjoy them. I think they're neat.
It was funny, yeah, when we did Fireteam Chat, and obviously Jose was instrumental in getting this off the
ground. I'm the guy who fought the war.
Like, yeah. At the time, we really focused more on platforms mm-hmm. and movies and television, like big genre discussions where you have like limitless things to talk about.
But, and meanwhile, I came in after Christmas break that year, babbling on and on about Destiny yeah. every morning to Alfredo and Dustin, and realized, why aren't we doing this as a shorter form version of a show versus spend half an hour and just hit the relevant topics? I do feel bad though, because the Fireteam Chat community sometimes reaches out to me because I don't do the show anymore. Yeah. Like Fran, Sean have both filled in and done a fantastic job along with Destin, who is one of my favorite people living today. And yeah, I think that they do a great job, and hopefully we can continue these experiments where, like, you know, the Fallout show, which Jared put together.
Yeah, Vault was a lot of fun. Yeah. And we still every now and then get together and film a Vault.
When DLC
shows up. We've actually got one in the can right now that Pokemon Go pushed down the road about 2 weeks past where it was meant to go out. that'll be out very soon. But yeah, I love doing Vault. Vault's a lot of fun. And I love these when the right game comes along, getting a chance to do them. I also love this show, though. This is a great show.
Thank you very much. So you can find Pokemon Secret Base on IGN's YouTube channel. Just head over to youtube.com/IGN. No dedicated channel for it yet. We'll see how this sort of shakes out. Please check it out and make sure you let Callie, Miranda, and Andrew know what you think. So, next up, there was a lot of good announcements about Pokemon that those guys hopefully are going to... They took over for us, actually. So, instead, we're going to start here with a PSA. This PSA is that 13 years of Nintendo power have now been preserved on the internet. And if you're watching this show on video, we actually have some Nintendo powers on the desk. And we also have something else on the desk we'll talk about in a minute. But that is an awesome thing.
So happy.
By the way, this PSA brought to you by a friend of the show, Mike, who wrote in to beg us to bring it up, and I think it was absolutely worth talking about.
No, Nintendo Power, a slice of a time in gaming history that really we're never going to recapture. This wonderful place between publicity and journalism where you watch that evolution kind of begin to happen, and I love it. I love it for that. I love Nintendo Power. It is difficult in this modern world of the internet to encapsulate how important a new issue of Nintendo Power arriving was, and to be the kid bringing it to class and waving it around when you couldn't look these things up instantaneously, when you couldn't get your news any other way. It moves me. Jose, just for a moment, I moved to song.
Yeah. Whoa.
Get the power, Nintendo power. Get the clues that you can use Nintendo power. Higher and higher, fighting your way through enemy fire.
Jared Petty, folks, a hit at karaoke parties all over the... Yeah, it was. That was a commercial.
Remember, I'm not from this planet.
Yeah. You weren't in the States when this happened, but you were here.
No. Like I mean, in Germany, we didn't have Nintendo Power.
That was pretty good falsetto, by the way.
I'm not a very good singer, but thank you.
The official mag was like Nintendo Fun Vision. I actually interned at it at one point.
Oh, that's right. You did. You told us about this.
I love what you said is really funny, right? Like,
You should have told me. We could have done a duet. I could have.
I'm sorry. I didn't plan
you guys
that.
You can do it at the end after I leave. No, that's beautiful. Beautiful. I was moved to tears too. But it must be, as a journalist, it must be hard to write under the corporate umbrella of Nintendo about Nintendo and knowing that, you know, you want to tell the truth, but you have to work within the confines of a kind of a marketing system. And that's not to say these guys like rated a game highly that they didn't like. There are negative reviews in Nintendo Power.
Yep. Absolutely.
But it's like it's this weird balance, right? And like having done the internship, there were certain words you couldn't say. You couldn't
set the stage for this, the internship. Yeah. I don't know if you've gone into super context on this. What was the internship?
Oh, after Japan, I stopped for I went back to Germany for a year after
and
interned in Frankfurt at the official Nintendo magazine. And,
really?
It came with all these rules of like things you can't say, and like it was very family friendly language. But like the word, like my first article is like, and then you shoot them. It's like we don't want to use shoot. And then and you can, you know, when your Pokemon gets killed, no, they faint. You know, it was nice. All.
Wait, you wrote about Pokemon?
No, I don't know what it was.
Oh, you don't remember
time,
what you wrote about?
But it was not no kill. You couldn't kill anything.
So Pear, as a bushy tailed intern, also has a famous photo shoot. That may or may not have been in the pages of this official Nintendo magazine. You want to tell us a little, tell the folks that story? Well, try and make up something really bad that they're not going to believe?
Well, no, they had Nintendo Funvision licensed apparel, like t-shirts and an umbrella, actually, with the logo on it. And so they wanted to probably they didn't get enough ad bookings. They wanted to fill a page with their apparel to upsell people.
So,
and so they're like, hey, we need to take a picture. Hey, you, young guy. Come here.
And they put a hat on him.
I looked like the dog from The Simpsons. Poochie.
He looked like a 90s kid because Pear looked really young. The photo showed up at an IGN presentation
one
day.
I put it in there.
I was surprised you did that. And I took a side-by-side photo that I never tweeted, but I wanted to.
Yeah.
So that might show up in the show.
Yeah, I have no problem
with
that. It's really funny. It was purposely like goofy. I didn't dress like that.
You didn't look the same.
No. And I was kind of angry.
How old were you?
How
old were you? 19?
No, it's
22?
No, older than that.
When so like 25, that? 24?
When was that? Like 25, probably. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I just look very young in that picture because I have a backwards baseball hat on.
Rakishly handsome.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
That's a good way to put it. No, absolutely. So we got a bunch of issues spread across the table. You should definitely check out a lot of great history there from the very first issue in 1988 to, I think there's only 13 years. There's still more to put up, but this is an awesome effort. And an awesome thing. And if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, you know this magazine very well, so you should absolutely check it out. Like, I actually have an issue open to Fire Red Leaf Green version, which is one of my favorite remakes of all time. Like, just redoing Pokemon in a GBA style and the whole wireless connectivity part of it as an option was really cool. So you were able to get a lot of great information.
Very cool. Bless the good people at the Internet Archive for
making things
like this
happen. Yes, yes. No, and we actually have a guest in the works, which I need to touch base with this person who worked at Nintendo Power. A couple, actually, who have been talking to us about maybe coming on the show one day. Don't want to name names yet because they are not 100% convinced, or we got to see when time lines up. But that's something we hope to bring you at some point. All right, so we have another thing on this table, if you're watching us on video. But I brought in my Super Famicom from... So my first trip to Japan in 2013... I bought a fully inboxed Japanese Nintendo Super Famicom. This thing came out in 1990. The box is in rough shape. The system is in great shape, considering.
It's not terrible.
Yeah. So I specifically brought this in today because I'm expecting a new 3DS with the Super Nintendo style.
Yeah.
And the box and materials look just like these, so I wanted to try and do a video for IGN. But serendipitously, it tied in as well to a conversation we started last week with a good friend of the show, Jeff Gerstmann, about the possibility of a SNES Classic. So just to quickly set the stage, Nintendo obviously has a new Classics label where they are publishing or putting out a machine called the NES Classic Edition. And this thing's coming out in November. It's really cool. We're really excited for it. 30 games, $60. We're not so happy about the wired controllers. You heard about that last week.
Yeah.
We decided, why not build a Super Nintendo Classic of our own as a suggestion, because we know you listen to the show, fans of Nintendo and maybe Nintendo themselves, and offer our suggestions. So last week we asked Jeff to give us five games, and he said, ActRaiser, great choice, by the way. We're going to talk about that. Actually, talk about it. ActRaiser.
Oh, I love that game. It's the first one is just such an awesome, weird combination of two gameplay styles.
That's right.
Side-scrolling, hack and slash, and then this weird little...
Sim.
Little sim, like village sim, right? Like, I mean, it's a very linear little thing, but like they basically made the map of an action game fun.
Yeah.
And then the music, it's just so fantastic.
It was really hard, too. That like, that so first stage, you can get killed, like, so, really fast.
So disappointed when the second one came out, and, like, yeah. It got rid of the whole, like, the town feature.
Yeah, no, totally. Anything to add on ActRaiser, Jerry?
ActRaiser is one of the most hyperbolically wonderful things ever crafted by humans. It is a living excuse for hyperbole. It is beautiful and wonderful and scales, and it's a game where you play God and you kill monsters with a sword and then you rescue people from caves and then humanity spurns you.
Just
it's
on
wonderful.
Those two things you just said, I'm surprised this is a Nintendo game, because they were very anti, you're not God in any of this, like leave religion out of it, and then like, you know, killing people, but we'll leave that part alone. No, love that game too. We'll probably put music from it in the episode. Second game he suggested was Contra 3 Alien Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome game. I played it with my friend in Japan. By the way, I had this exact model, so I grew up with this Super Nintendo look. Does it look weird to you guys? Because to me, this looks like the normal machine. Whenever I see the purple box, I'm like, ugh.
No, this is it looks way better. It's much better industrial design than the purple one. Also, yeah. You can clearly see the PlayStation, like, roots in there. Like, you look at that thing, you're like, oh, that's where the PlayStation came from. Okay. It's, yeah. Down to the color wheel and the buttons, then everything looks like it is a lovely piece of industrial design. Yeah. I think it's beautiful. But talking about Alien Wars.
And it plays Contra.
Yeah, it does play Contra 3 Alien Wars. And I like Contra 3. I like it less than Contra. It's very, very good and it's beautiful. But I feel like it's one of those games where making the sprites slightly larger actually makes the game a little less good. Castlevania 4 has that issue where Simon's so big that they had to slow the game down. And they did a very good job with it in 4. And the music fits and the tone works.
Love
I feel like it's less perfectly executed in Contra 3. Contra's not a game you want to be slow. And the smaller sprites in the NES version, I believe, allow you to do a little more with screen real estate and make things feel a little more menacing and quick. Nonetheless, it's a beautiful game.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
No, and that was a common thing on Super Nintendo games. I feel like they were going for really big sprites. Even ActRaiser, the sprites felt huge compared to stuff you played on the NES.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Which means sometimes you're at the edge of the screen or an enemy appears on screen very quickly. And, you know, like, because your shots don't reach as far as in the older games where the sprites were smaller. Like, it is... Yeah, the gameplay is not as good, but man, that was a fantastic two-player mode with like cool vehicle action. Remember those sequences, like short things where you hop in and like just hanging from stuff while your friend is on a different level just feels so good when you have these kind of multiple paths you take, you know, even though you're on the same screen. It was just really cool.
Got it. All right,
and then that double ending.
And that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful sprite art. Some of just the best.
Yeah, the Mode 7 stuff was so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and just to go back to what you were asking about the Super Famicom earlier, to me, this was always superior to the US one. Mm. You saw this in magazines, and you were immediately just sort of blown away. And I'm holding it. If you haven't seen what a Nintendo Super Famicom looks like, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to describe it very well over the airwaves for you. But you can Google it while you listen on the same device that you're listening to us right now. But I used to see this in magazines and just immediately lose it and go, oh my god, that looks so cool. That is exactly what the next step of Super Nintendo should be like. And then we got these purple buttons, and I was like, what is this thing? They were like purple, big, wide rectangles you just pushed up. What are you staring at?
It has a face.
It kind of
filled it upside down. It does have a face.
It looks like me. It looks like an angry old man with a giant multicolored
mole. It's frowning.
Jose, do you know why
they described it?
Do you know why they redesigned it for the States in that particular motif? I don't know.
If I had to assume, it's just because even with the NES, they did it. I think they were very cognizant that the U.S. market is different.
Didn't look fun enough. This looked too much like a business computer to them.
Yeah, just like the Famicom didn't look that great here.
Had the kind of home computer, like slats in the back, the gray color scheme. And so they thought, hey, purple is fun, right? Yeah. Like they... What I always hated is that
about the 90s,
the multicolor button setup, which really made things so easy. Like hit the red button, They're turning purple.
Yeah. Yeah, and grabbing those four beautiful primaries.
Yeah, yeah, but purple was a kind of a signature color to Nintendo, if you think about it. I mean, the NES ads, almost everything felt like it had kind of a purple hue, a purple hinge to it, outside of also being the 90s, which was way too purple for anyone's good, I feel. But well, we love him, RIP. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was a thing that I just think they were aware of, that like, in order to gain a foothold in the U.S. market and sort of resuscitate video games as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. The entire market was resuscitated by the idea that we need to make this look like a solid entertainment piece, like something that fits right next to your VCR and is just as useful. I don't know if that was the same design motif for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, that's
based on that purple. But
it's a very playful, definitely, but it's odd because it contrasted so much with the Genesis, which is the most 90s thing that ever happened.
Yeah.
But
thankfully, it was sort of at least closer to this vision, because if you think about Famicom to NES,
yep.
You know, you had this ejection system that, you know, eventually broke.
Yeah, it's almost like a role reversal, like, because mm-hmm. the Japanese original Famicom looks much more playful than the NES, and then they kind of flip, and then the Super Famicom looks much more businesslike.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. All right, so then to round out Jeff's list, and we probably don't have to say too much about the next three games, but we will quickly.
Iconic.
Yeah, the three of the best video games ever made in the 90s. Super Mario World, Zelda: A Link to the Past, Super Metroid.
Woohoo!
That's it. Yeah, I mean, those three...
Holy Trinity, some
talk about... You can't talk about the system without mentioning those three names. They're just so good, and each one of them is so different from the other, right? Like, obviously, there are similarities between Super Metroid and Zelda, and that you use items to progress and stuff, but, like... They're just so, they feel and sound and look so different. All three really amazing.
We keep bringing up sound. Man, that thing had a great sound chip.
Oh, God.
Absolutely.
And Konami, you know, and the old Treasure team were just the masters at getting everything out of that thing. Super Castlevania, like, it sounds so good to this day. Any of the Goemon games that Konami did sound amazing.
And Act Racer just a bum, 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 bum.
Excellent.
So good. All right. So, Jared is joining us today to give us his five picks. He is allowed, before he gets started, to take out one of Jeff's picks.
So
Jeff Gerstmann, just putting that out there.
Does he have
apology.
To pick all new games, or can they be duplicates?
I asked him to pick new games.
Okay,
so
perfect.
We
have our treasure chest full of games. You get to add five, but you take one out?
Yeah, you're allowed to take one out.
I challenge myself to try all new things here. I feel good. I feel honored to be invited to be a part of this noble endeavor.
Well, thank you.
But you guys should know, Jared is such a nice person. I feel like he probably was awake all night with anxiety.
Actually, I asked him an hour
before. He had to take out one game away from Jeff.
That's not true. So I asked him an hour before the show. I'm sorry, by the way. I was a little busy this morning.
No, it's okay. And found a way to make it. It's still a nice replacement pair.
All right, let's see.
It's a nice replacement. So do you want to hear the replacement first or the whole list?
Go with your replacement. Okay. Who are you replacing?
So I'm replacing Super Mario World.
What? Like, how dare you? What are you doing? Why? Oh, Pear got up.
Because.
Pear got up and left.
It was very late. I'm replacing Super Mario World, the second best Mario platformer, with the Super Mario All-Stars plus Super Mario World combo cart.
And Pear comes back.
That's right. Because that is a cheap cheat there.
It's a total cheat.
Toward the end of the distribution of the Super Nintendo, they produced a cart that had all the Super Mario All-Stars on it, which is one of the best, most wonderful compilations to this day, I think, ever, along with a slightly modified version of Super Mario World. So you
what
got
was different?
They changed a couple of sprite things and a little bit. If I remember right, it's a little bit of how Luigi handles. Do not quote me on that. It has been a while.
Yeah. With the
version of Super Mario World slightly changed.
Yeah, so Mario World's gone through some changes, even like to GBA. And Luigi's actually been changed like three times.
Yeah,
there's some awesome like Wikipedia pages just dedicated to Luigi's journey through the Mario games, because it feels like every time they reissue something, they also change them some way.
Yeah, because he was exactly the same. The original. Right. He was just palette swap.
So this way, you get Mario 1, 2, and 3 in their beautifully revised versions. You get Lost Levels, which was cool at the time.
Jared Petty, IGN.com.
And you get Mario World, one of the most delightful.
So everyone will always hate Lost Levels. I mean, I will never play that thing. Like, it's just, it's too hard, right? It's too much.
It was a taste of what Mario Maker would bring.
decades later.
It's hard in mean ways. Hard games.
Wind but, in yeah, a video it, game it, when you can't see it?
Yeah, it's like playing R-Type against invisible enemies. It's just don't, no.
Yeah,
just
it's definitely a weird game, and like obviously we got a different game in the United States instead of it. I always felt, though, that if it had been titled like, this is the expert edition, I think it would have been revered more and it would have been understood more as being that sequel.
Yep. I agree.
All right, Jared, let's hear your picks.
Okay, so two kind of forward ones here. Chrono Trigger, which is a beautiful role-playing game that it does so many things right, and also was one of the first role-playing games to eliminate so many of the things that RPGs did wrong. Chrono Trigger, it put the enemies on the map where you could see them. It had a simplified, yet not completely devoid of strategy battle system, incredibly beautifully rendered, lovable characters, a great story.
Meaningful plot twist.
Plot twist.
Game of Thrones.
Huge plot twist. Yeah, I mean, think of the middle of Chrono Trigger, you're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Or even Frog's whole storyline is always like, it brings a tear to your eye, right?
Yeah.
And also, when you talked about the battle system, the dual tech, triple tech, which I felt like maybe I was just ignorant of other RPGs, but I did not see that anywhere, I felt like I didn't, and it was so good.
And so many beautiful endings. We could be effusive about this game for an hour, and then talking about music.
Yeah.
Lord. It was just Jose, you were talking about this before the show, a dream team sort of of developers all coming together.
They
had the whole leitmotif thing going where each character had a recognizable theme. Obviously, like Nintendo are great at using that squares too, right? Like if you think of like Kefka or a character from the Final Fantasy universe, you immediately hear the music. But like I always hear Frog's theme when I see that character in front of me. It's just so good.
Or even just when you power on the cartridge and you just get that sound of the pendulum going back and forth on the clock. That's still one of the most iconic intros of a video game.
I have a dream that's never going to come true that I'm going to be sitting at E3 one year and something's going to say Square Enix proudly presents, and I'm just going to see that clock come through the frame.
That would be a great way to introduce it.
And I would fall over dead on the ground.
It would be Chrono Trigger 3 because Chrono Cross counts, whether you want to admit it or not.
Chrono Cross gave us Dreams of the Shore Near Another World, so that's okay, I guess.
I think whatever is old is going to be new again. Like, somebody who reveres that game and grew up with it is going to get a chance tackling a sequel, and we'll do it justice. We've seen this happen.
But that's an intimidating one, especially because you're talking about Hironobu Sakaguchi, you're talking about Yuji Horii, who are, like, guys that are absolutely revered in the world of Japanese video games. Like, they are two of the most important men on top of many other people who worked on that game. Akira Toriyama.
I know,
but
You can say the same thing about Super Metroid and Metroid Prime.
I'm not as talented as those people, but I'll happily take the opportunity, Square Enix, if you want to.
Jared's going to make it for you. Don't worry.
There you go.
Happy to. So that's a beautiful, beautiful game. I go back and forth as to whether that or Suikoden Do is my favorite RPG, and depending on the day, I go one or the other. Final Fantasy III, known as III in the States, VI in Japan, and now worldwide after the retcon, which is a very different RPG than Chrono Trigger, in a way somehow even more epic and sweeping. I don't think it's as refined an RPG. I do think it is the best Final Fantasy. Best is not a helpful word, I realize, but that's how that's where I go to in the core. It is a wonderfully crafted story full of twists and turns, and again, a couple of really meaningful plot points that you don't see coming.
The opera scene, incredible to this day. And then you have Uematsu's work, which I left his name off on Chrono Trigger because I had a hint that this was coming up, but Nobuo Uematsu's work, which fantastic composer, like someone who absolutely deserves every bit of credit he gets.
The Super Nintendo Final Fantasy trilogy, honestly, is just such a fantastic game series. Like, if there was a collection, I would gladly remove 6 and put that one in, because I'm very fond of the music in 5 and 4 and, you know, like the job system and the previous titles. But 6 was just so polished, and you know, just like the emotional beats are so good.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the storytelling sequences, they really tried.
The Wikipedia page for JRPG should just be a picture of Final Fantasy VI.
Like, in the snow with the water. Yeah.
Right? No, yeah. You can definitely tell that they learned a lot since Final Fantasy IV specifically, which was one of the first games I felt that the scenarios were trying to go for some emotional sort of things that happen, right? Like when Tella, you know, spoiler.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Scenes like that, or when the twins sacrifice themselves. Back then, the emotional beat lasted all of 2 seconds, and then I was like, oh, well, we gotta go. You know,
but it was an emotional beat, and that was so new for us.
But then and 6 that takes the torch and just ran with it.
Yeah, like Final Fantasy IV is beautiful for its ambitious brevity, I think. And Final Fantasy VI is beautiful for its ambitious scale. Like, I feel they're great.
And they had good they had pre-written, predetermined story moments, but there were, like, moments where I was, like, I remember one of the scenes where I think you're escaping in an airship or something, and one of your characters doesn't make it in time. And then my friend is like, no, I played it. He makes it. I'm like, what? You know, it's true, right? Like,
So Final Fantasy VI. So far we have Super Mario All-Stars plus Mario World combo cart cheating, which I'll replace Mario World with. So that way we get an even better version. We have Chrono Trigger, the superb RPG, in Final Fantasy III/VI, which is almost as good. The next two are picks because they are hard to play other places and they're beautiful, wonderful games. The first of those is Star Fox, the original Star Fox, a game that I think is a superbly realized home arcade game. There are not a lot of arcade games made just for home consoles. Star Fox knocks that ambition out of the park.
At 15 frames per second, but I agree with you.
Yeah.
You're lucky.
Yeah, at 15. And probably because of the chip emulation, even, I don't know if it's a legal issue or what, but Nintendo just doesn't release this in other emulation collections and services. So if you want to play Star Fox, you've either got to play it off a cart or you've got to steal it. Yeah. Because they won't let you buy it. And it's a wonderful experience. And as much as I like 64, I feel like the pure rail flight version of Star Fox with its, you know, branching paths and cool secrets is just a superb video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great game. I think, obviously, it's suffered over the years, but it is still playable once you get into the groove of the, you know, of the kind of sluggishness of the visuals. It's still pretty impressive, like, what they did with so few geometrical shapes. Like, how they just kind of let you explore your path, and
I guess
it's a good game, and the music is also awesome.
Oh yes, yeah. No, absolutely, no. I guess a pie in the sky idea for me, maybe not for this collection per se, but if Nintendo ever pursued it, would be to bring that game up to 30 frames per second standard, like just rebuild it, but keep its simplicity, its artistic simplicity. Like, don't change that.
Well, you could do a 60 frames per second version with, you know, those visuals, that be pretty awesome.
Pretty intense.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah, and to some extent. I mean, I think it sells to a small audience, though, and, you know, maybe, again, 3D games have come so much further since. Yeah. That's why it's always such an interesting thing to note that it's never been re-released. Like, it's one of those games that I feel like there's an audience that wants to play this game.
Well, it's one of those examples of a rare low frames per second action game that was thoughtfully designed by people who understood what that meant. And so the controls still work. Like, that's what strikes me, is that, yes, it's slow, but it's precise while it's slow. You don't feel like you're lagging at all. It's doing exactly, you know, you shoot where you're trying to shoot and you move where you're trying to move. And that's actually fair and low for rare in low frame rate shooters like that. So it's pretty cool. The last one, however, is the prince, the king, the emperor of Super FX chip games. And that is the venerable Yoshi's
Stunt
Island.
Tracks,
not Sunrise FX. No, Yoshi's Island, which is a delightful little game. Yeah. That has not gotten justice since its initial release. It has been remade twice now in yucky versions that people should not play.
That's fair.
And you really need to go back. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't like to encourage theft, but if it's a choice between federal prison and not playing Mario, choose federal prison. Yoshi's Island is just wonderful. I really hope they release this someday for us so we can legitimately play it on Nintendo hardware and give them money for it.
Yep. No,
he doesn't really want you to steal it. But
yeah, he doesn't.
You can buy a Super Famicom or a Super Nintendo and play it. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, like the
FX chip allowed for certain visuals that weren't possible in like Super Mario World, right? Like the walls falling forward, for example. Like you had this polygonal, I think it was polygonal wall, right? Like,
what makes it work. The FX effects are so subtle in it.
But
they really are.
Yeah, it's not this kind of like super visually rich game. It's very playful and muted.
Well, and then you have levels like Touch Fuzzy Get Dizzy where everything just takes this warped effect and looks just really surreal. Like it takes an art style that's already cartoony and just warps and transforms it in a way that I don't think I saw many games do, but again, I may be misremembering. But I do feel like the only way, unfortunately, you can play this game today is if you settle for the Game Boy Advance port, which is available on your Wii U for sale. I believe it was one of the Ambassador games, if you're one of those who still remembers what that even means. Ambassadorship. We were in there.
I remember that. I have some icon somewhere.
Somewhere, right? Yeah, that's it. We're ambassadors.
Yeah.
Be proud.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a shame that given today's technology and how good that art would look on a nice, you know, HD TV.
Yeah, it's very beautiful, but beyond the beauty, it's a mechanically unique platformer with great mechanics, great ideas for how you control your characters, and just superb level design.
Well, I mean, they turned the timer off. You didn't have to worry about getting to the end of a flagpole marker or something at the end within a certain allotted time. Instead, you have to worry about getting this baby there, which was stressful. Mm-hmm. I will say, the first time I played Yoshi's Island, I was turned off because I got hit. I made a mistake on a jump. That thing started crying up a storm, and I was like, wait, I got it. And you have 10 seconds to get that kid back, or hasta la vista. Like, that's it. You have to start over. Yeah, baby. See that? Oh my god!
Lovely.
No, but that
that's
was it,
lovely.
Right? Like, and so
it's a better name for that game, Hasta la vista, baby.
But I didn't grow to appreciate it until I got much older, and it is fantastic level design. I think the bosses are also very unique, visually distinct from bosses who you have to make their pants disappear so that they become embarrassed and leave.
Well, that's right, the big round.
First boss. Right. It's one of those. And then you also, just last thing on that game that blows my mind to this day, is what speedrunners have done with it, what guys like Trihex have done with it, where the fastest hands on the internet that you will ever see, even so fast at that game, in fact, that he has put them in ice and then played the game to see what his speedrun record will be. Insane. If you haven't seen his videos, you absolutely should Google that, find out what that's about. That is a great choice.
Thank you.
I really like your list.
I like all your additions, I guess.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I will let Jeff know that Super Mario World was replaced by a superior version, and one that was kind of hard to find because I think Super Mario All-Stars plus Super Mario World was a pack-in. That was not sold.
It was a late pack-in, I believe. If it was ever sold on its own, I don't know about it, but I'm not sure. I didn't look this up.
Yeah, it was sold on eBay. But it's the truth.
I think I might have seen a box for it somewhere, so I wonder if it did get a limited shelf life, but I'm not sure.
I'd be curious to see.
It could have been a mock-up.
You guys now have 9 games there, and like, just if I close my eyes, I can think instantly of 9 more that are fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that system, it is, in my mind, the greatest system ever made. The Super Nintendo. And the software lineup is just second to none.
It was a great heyday for Japanese games specifically. That and the PS1 era, I feel, were two distinct eras in video games that I will never forget. I'm so glad I lived through them, because between experimentation, ideas, and just games that absolutely changed the way you thought about things, that was the period where it all happened.
And crazy experiments with stuff before the hardware was ready for them. Like, remember the 3D Jurassic Park game? And there was just so much crazy.
But it was ridiculously creative. Yeah, they were pushing things so many different directions.
Cool. Okay, so we're going to leave that there. We have a guest coming in next week who's going to bring his 5 games to the list.
And Naka Jared.
Naka Jared or a Jeff pick out. Like, we'll see.
Look at that list. You can't remove one of those games. You're possibly the worst human being.
Oh, that I'm setting this up? Yeah, well, we'll see how that works out. All right.
So mean.
So we're going to take a quick second to answer one question on the question block, because we got to go. We're actually running a little bit out of time here. But we did get a question in from, let me find his name, a good friend of the show, Marshall, who writes in, hello, Nintendo Voice Chat. I'm Marshall. I'm proud to have autism. I love the show. Keep up the great work. Do you think we will see a new Nintendo Direct for this month? We haven't had a Direct since for a while, specifically when this email was sent in March. I'm not sure, entirely sure if that's so accurate, but I want to say it's been long enough, so we'll strike that from the record. And personally, I really don't like long breaks between Nintendo Directs, the hiatus that happens in between where we just don't hear what's going on for a while. Do you think we'll see a Direct about upcoming announced games for Wii U and 3DS, or even something about NX anytime soon? Keep up the amazing work. All right, Marshall, we're going to tell it to you straight.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell it straight.
If you want to start, you can.
I think they're going to do a Direct when they've got the Super NES, the classic NES. Sorry, not Super NES. The NES Classic coming out. I feel like that's a cool kind of thing to demo on screen because it's such a visually striking piece of hardware. It's so tiny, and the majority of people have not seen it.
Especially if there's a feature on it that they haven't talked about yet.
And then obviously they have Pokemon coming. And so there's no question in my mind that there will be a Direct coming, but like right now feels like the wrong time.
So interesting to kind of push back on the Pokemon thing a little bit. Pokemon's kind of run off on their own. Like the last 3 or 4 Pokemon updates have been done by Pokemon Company themselves through a trailer. It has not been through a Direct, which I like that only because I feel like Pokemon is up there with like Smash Brothers, where the more updates you give people, the more excited they are for what's coming. And just last week, seeing like, for example, the original 151 changed in the Alola region, like that's cool. Like the idea that there are different versions of Pokemon you've known for years all of a sudden showing up in the game. Vulpix is now an icy Vulpix, like things like that.
Blue Vulpix, right?
Yeah. I think that's cool. But I worry they're not going to have something to say with Nintendo Direct for a while. I worry that it might be even as far as NX.
Do you think there'll be a Gamescom edition? No?
No.
No, then?
I don't think so. So around Gamescom, and I'm going to kick it over to you, Jared, next in a sec. I would say, so keep in mind, Metroid Prime Federation Force is coming out. I think that's August 19th. Yeah, I want to say. It doesn't seem like they're going to say much about that game. And all the features that they've wanted to talk about, they've talked about.
That's not the game that they'll choose to highlight because they just know that the hardcore fan reaction, the people tune in for those directs, are the ones who are negative on it. I feel like it has to be a bigger game like a Pokemon or the classic.
But the common theme in a lot of directs is not just gameplay footage, but new features to talk about, things that you didn't know, or announcements for things that are coming that you didn't know. And just right now, there's just this very uncertain timetable of the future. I do think I agree with you that NES Classic is a good thing to put in there, especially if there's a feature they haven't talked about.
Yeah.
But let's say there isn't a feature to talk about. Paper Mario would be another game to put on that list for sure.
But yeah, I don't think there's going to be like this mega announcement surprise thing. I think there'll be some light stuff. Remember, there's still Animal Crossing to talk about, too.
Dragon Quest is coming out. Yeah. Dragon Quest 7, Fragments of Forgotten Past. I would say by September, I think we'll see something. Because you don't want to go into the holiday with nothing to say.
September timing is good. Yeah. And that's, you know, like I don't think they'll make a big splash at TGS either. But there has been speculation like when will Nintendo talk more NX? Yeah, it's not going to be a Gamescom.
I think anything they do is going to be just kind of, hey guys, it's still coming. They're going to show us other, but they've put themselves in this position. They made their call. They decided this Christmas is not going to be their thing, and I think that's going to lead to a weird, kind of awkward Direct for the next one.
That's
if they
what
decide
it's
to
been,
it.
Right? Yeah, like right. For the last couple months, I will say there are some games on the books that came out in Japan that have still not shown their face in the West. The new Picross, for example, Picross 3D 2, which was a weird title, but whatever. We really like that game. You and I played it. Detective Pikachu still has not shown its face on the West. That's another one. Yo-Kai Watch 3. Yo-Kai Watch 2 is about to come out. You probably won't hear about 3 until maybe 6 months from now or from that game's ship date. You still have Dragon Quest 8. Is a thing that's announced, but they haven't really said much about.
Yep.
And then you have that new IP game that they announced at E3. But you notice the theme here is all 3DS. I don't know if that's been made obvious, but this is the times we live in.
Yeah. I'm hoping that there is some cool surprise in the form of DLC. Like, hey, guess what? There is another Mario Kart track pack. Track pack, and you get X new tracks
or Mario Maker even. Yeah.
Just let me play a slime in Smash Brothers.
Something like that.
Yeah,
slime.
Yeah, oh, Dragon Quest. I'll be a slime in Smash Brothers.
Oh man, I wonder what that move would be like.
He can't punch though.
Huh?
He can't punch.
Who says?
What's he gonna do?
He does something. He does something every time. But
it's just gonna be like Kirby.
I just love you. Jump in the air, turn into a metal slime, and just crush them. Yeah, it'd be great. You know,
we can go with this.
That's a great character, actually.
There we go.
Yeah, you can do some really creative things with this line.
I like it.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to Nintendo Voice Chat. We're a weekly show on IGN. You know the whole spiel. You can leave us feedback by sending us an email at nvc@ign.com. A bunch of you have written in about NX and NX questions. I have not missed those emails. We just haven't found an elegant way to bring them into the show yet. We'll be doing that soon. We didn't ask for them, by the way, but we appreciate them.
Yeah.
Make sure you email that stuff. Also, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Please feel free to let us know what you think of the show. We're always encouraged and happy to read that feedback. Lastly, you can find us all on Twitter. Jared, thank you so much for joining us.
You thank
can find
you for having
Jared
me.
Petty at
Petty, comma Jared.
And you can listen to a show that Petty, comma Jared does called
I make a little show called Pockets Full of Soup. And if you want to check it out, I'd like that.
It's a cooking show. It's using very non-traditional methods of cooking.
Yep.
No, it's an uplifting life show, right?
It's a storytelling show, yeah.
It's talking
people telling stories about other people.
Very cool.
It's fun.
Make sure you check that out. Check out IGN's Pokemon Secret Base, which you should absolutely look up on the internet. Don't just look up Secret Base. You're going to end up getting wiki results for how to do it in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. IGN's Pokemon Secret Base. Then you'll get a little closer. You can find Per Schneider at
PerIGN.
And you can find myself, Jose_Otero. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rain Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.